You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the bluest room in town. Yeah, the actually funny.
It is the Blue Room. It is your weekly show. A little bit later, a little bit of a different day. The break and the midweek match obscured us a little bit. But we're here to talk about Everton and Everton team. Despite everything, are into the fourth round of the FA Cup. They've got a game against Luton coming up next weekend. So we've got a weekend without them. I don't know if that's something I'm looking forward to or not. We'll get into that a little bit more as we go on. Of course, we will talk about profit and sustainability, FFP, all the letters of the alphabet a little bit later on the show when it comes to Everton and what that might have in store. But we're going to start off by talking about football. And joining me to talk first and foremost about football are Patrick Ridge. Patrick, good to get you back on, mate. How are you doing?
Oh, thanks for having me, Matt. Yeah, good, thank you. Just, surviving the freezing cold. I'm jealous of Lyndon over in the warmth of California. But, it is a bit weird, isn't it, this weekend? It's like, I think everyone needs a rest from Everton, but at the same time, it would be also nice to have some actual footy to focus on instead of all the other nonsense. But, yeah, apart from that, away from that, really good, thanks. Just, yeah, getting through this cold spell.
Wonderful stuff. Lyndon, is it warm in California at the moment?
Not where I am. I mean, it's probably, I don't know, like 12 or 13 right now. It's not quite as cold as you, but we've had our chilly days, but no, it does not compare. And then obviously the rest of the country is dealing with like Arctic, like truly Arctic temperatures and, you know, lakes freezing and stuff. So yeah, we've got it easy over here.
Yeah, well, none of us can moan really in that case. But yeah, let's start off by talking about the footy side of it. Like I said, into the fourth round of the Cup, it was an absolute slog watching that at Goodison Park on a Wednesday night. I'm not going to lie. But I just sort of wanted to speak, Patrick, about the three games after Wolves as a whole, really, because, you know, I don't know about you, but watching that Wolves game, I was sort of sat there wondering, is this the end of something in a sense of, you know, the end of a bad run and, sorry, the end of a good run in a team that's just gone one game too far? Or is this the start of something where you potentially have a tricky run and, you know, the squad gets stretched and the players start to find it really hard? But I think the way in which they've kind of bounced back from that has been, obviously, we've only scored one goal in that time, but three clean sheets. We progressed in the Cup. We've got a really good point against a good Villa side. I think they deserve a lot of credit for the way in which they bounced back from what Dyche has said a few times. It was, you know, one of the aberrations of the season, really, in terms of performances.
Yeah, I think it was just a case of, like, if we look at them in kind of three-game blocks after the four-game winning streak that we had, you know, the Spurs game, where I think we can all say we deserved at least a point from it, like, played probably one of the best performances of the season, to be honest. especially from any team I've seen against Spurs, were absolutely fantastic and very unfortunate not to get a point, not to win it. And then the City game, it's kind of a very good first half for what it was. And then in the second half, it was just that kind of the fatigue playing against City there, a bit of quality, a bit of a, you know, mistake from Pickford. And then, yeah, that one game too many against Wolves where it, just none of it looked right. None of it worked. The change of shape, it just, yeah, everyone looked knackered. And then, yeah, just to recover. And it felt weird because it's, you know, we had, what, eight games in December and six of those were over a period of 2 weeks or five of those over a period of 2 weeks. And then the next 2.5 weeks, we've had three games. And it's just how that part of the season works. And it has felt like they've been slowly getting there and, you know, defending well. I think what we did against Palace in the first game was go back to basics and just get the shape back, get defending well again, stop conceding those sloppy chances. And, you know, we had a few chances ourselves. I think could have probably won it if Calvert-Lewin hadn't been sent off. And then, yeah, just kind of built from there, really. I think the Villa performance, a bit shaky at times, but they're a really good side. And, you know, I didn't get to watch the, I listened on the radio on Wednesday. It was lovely. I was quite therapeutic. I might just do it for the rest of the season and, you know, find out we finished sixth or something and then got 20 points deducted. But it sounded at least like it was just really one of those games that was a slog, but at least Everton had the quality, the moment of quality in the game to get over the line.
Yeah, I mean, that's my main takeaway from Thursday, Lyndon. I sort of said this a little bit after the game on Wednesday night, and that's that Andre Gomes has still got that bit of magic, hasn't he? And I think in our position at the moment, with the squad so thin, with, you know, a midfielder at the African Cup of Nations, with our other main attacking midfielder out injured, we've got to sort of look at players like that and try to find a way of using them, haven't we? And Gomes might only be able to play a half here, half an hour there, but it feels like over the next few weeks, certainly with the Corey injury, we're going to have to get him on the pitch quite a lot.
Yeah, we're going to need him to step up, particularly those players that have got the ability. And, you know, Andre Gomes is, it's amazing when you look at some of the video clips from his Valencia days, what a talented player he was. And we've really only seen that in very brief flashes. So, yeah, we need as much as he can give us. And, you know, go out with a bang, make us feel like we were keeping you on, even though we can't afford to keep you on. And we know from history that, you know, you just don't have the consistency to perform the way that we need you to. So I think you're right. If he can give us some really important moments in a half here, a half there, it's going to be important. Because I think if you look at the team as a whole, we've got so few ways to change the team if things aren't going well. And obviously the Dan Juma issue is sort of contributing to that. I think we all expected him to contribute a lot more than he has. whether he stays or not, it seems it's very conflicting reports right now whether he's going to stay or not. But he's kind of that's symbolic of that wider issue where, you know, if we're getting to deep into a match and we really need to change something and it's not working and the opposition has kind of worked out what we're trying to do, which I think is... we're seeing that quite a lot now. They kind of know what we're going to do and how to stop us. And just having something, a game changer off the bench, which at times and very rare times, as we know, Gomes has been that player. So yeah, absolutely. We need him to chip in with some magic because he's got it. We know he's got it. He just needs to deliver it.
Yeah. I was going to talk about Dan Juma before we moved on. I thought it was really interesting, Patrick, that he didn't even get on the pitch on Wednesday night. It was one of them where I think he did okay against Villa, didn't he? But, you know, it wasn't a statement performance by any means. I think he was certainly better against Villa than he was against Burnley in the Cup, where it was like, my word, you know, what on earth are you doing here sort of thing. But Dyche, quick to get McNeil on the pitch that day when he didn't look anywhere near fit, even against Villa. And then in midweek again, I don't think McNeil looked anywhere on it. And I think he's quite cautious players, bringing players back from injury, Dyche. But I think McNeil, for some reason, he likes to get him back quick. I remember when he brought him on to Sheffield United earlier in the season, I was like, oh my God, this lad's nowhere near it. But I don't know if that's a measure of the fact of how much he likes McNeil or he just doesn't seem to quite trust Dan Juma. And even Lewis Dobbin getting on the pitch before him on Wednesday, it's one of them where, like, the more you see stuff like that, despite what he says in the press conferences and those kinds of things, I kind of wouldn't be surprised if he ended up elsewhere at the end of this window.
No, I wouldn't be surprised. I think, yeah, with Dan Juma, when he has got on the pitch, yeah, he hasn't really done much. But then it's so frustrating because it's like he's nearly been there as well. There's nearly been those moments. So against Villa, he had the volley, which he probably should have done better with. I think he then had a shot where he should have passed it. But then the only other thing he does is play a fantastic outside-the-boot pass through to Calvert-Lewin, who should score. And if Calvert-Lewin puts that away, everyone's going, oh, that what a brilliant pass from Dan Drewman. Because he doesn't, it's kind of taken away. Even back to that Burnley game where he was really poor in a role that maybe we did think would suit him, but I don't think does if you're just going to play direct, because he's not got that height on physicality. There was a point just before he went off where Calvert-Lewin, and he plays a 1-2 with Calvert-Lewin. Calvert-Lewin breaks, plays it back, and it just gets a Burnley defender just gets to it before Dan Drewman gets a tap in. And even against Palace in the cup, when he's got a few chances and, you know, he's nearly there, those nearly moments. And it's like, if one of those goes in, are we thinking very differently about it all? I am surprised that he didn't play on Wednesday. And that was probably the time when I finally thought, well, I think he'll be gone before the window shuts. But I do think it's imperative that if they are going to do that, they have to get someone in before. And I know the money's tight, but, you know, in theory, I think Everton paid, what, 3 million for him, give or take, on loan. They're going to get some of that back if the loan is cancelled. They'll get probably half of it back for half season, give or take again. You know, can that money be used to then go and get, I don't know, Maxwell Cornet or someone like that who's going to come in on loan on a cheap deal and actually make an impact? But if not, they've got to keep him, because I just think they're far too short. But yeah, Dyche just kind of absolutely loves McNeil, and he is that one player that he'll just play through anything. But it's like his foot was hanging off and then he was back a week later. And now he's played 90 minutes in a kind of not a meaningless game, but like, you know, like did McNeil really need to play 90 minutes on Wednesday? I don't know. But yeah, it just feels like the Dan Juma thing is a signing that I think has not worked out through no one's fault, really. I don't think he's got a massively bad attitude, maybe flashes of it. But, you know, he's doing his coaching badges at Everton. He gets along with a lot of the players by the sounds of it. I think it's just one, he doesn't really fit the system. And it's like Dyche is just not going to use him if he doesn't fit, unless he doesn't have any other option.
Yeah, there's a funny moment on Wednesday, actually, where like James Garner's taking a corner in front of the Garner Street and Dan Juma and Chimiti are warming up. And like, they went over to him and like, gave him like this big like pep talk before he's taking the corner, like trying to really encourage him. I was like, oh, bless, you're just so keen to be involved somehow, some way in this football match, because you know you're probably not going to get on at any point. What would you do with him, Lyndon? Because there is talent there, isn't there? I think we saw it in the first half against Crystal Palace, and he obviously faded off the game that day. But it does just feel like Dyche only really plays him when he feels like he absolutely has to, and all other options are sort of gone.
Yeah, it's been a bit weird, hasn't it? He's got sort of gone games where everybody and his mother's got on before Dan Juma, and then he's straight back into the team. I've been trying to work out what Dyche has been trying to do with him, but I mean, he's clearly got talent. We've seen that from when he was at Villarreal, and then he scored a couple of goals for Spurs as well. Yeah, I mean, he obviously didn't get as much playing time there as he wanted either. I think you nailed it when you said he doesn't really fit in the system, because, you know, it's the way that we play. He's really got to be an effective goal scoring winger for us, because one thing we need in the team is goals. I think early on in the season, particularly when he scored the early goals in the cup and at Sheffield United, you thought, yeah, okay, this lad's going to be a really good weapon off the bench, and obviously standing in when the first choice wingers aren't fit. But it's just not worked for him. I think he's like some of the other players, he's sort of trying too hard to make that statement. And a lot of the time when he should release the ball, when he shouldn't shoot, he's shooting. Obviously, he's really unlucky at Spurs. And yeah, when that last chance goes off the goalkeeper's knee, the jammy bugger. I feel bad for him. But it's when you're looking at the way that Dyche wants to play and that kind of maximum effort thing that Dyche requires, I don't know whether Dan Juma really fits that mold, whereas McNeil clearly does. So I think if we can find another player of that mold, then maybe it does make sense for him to leave. But we can't let him go unless we've got a replacement lined up. I think that would be suicide.
Yeah. As I definitely look at him, I never think like you're lazy or not tracking back when he's been on the pitch for us. But like, he's never really stood out as a hard worker either. It's an interesting one. But he has had quite a few like nearly moments. I remember the the volley he had late on in the quarter final against Fulham to put us through. If that goes in, like you were saying before, Patrick, you know, in one of the other games, if he scores that, he's a hero, and all of a sudden, you know, things look a lot different for him.
He's a floater, isn't he? And like, I think that's the thing of like the position he plays as well. He's like, he's not quite a striker and not quite a winger, and that just isn't a position in a Sean Dyche team. I think Mick Greenall said that a few times as well. It's like, it's just a player that there's definitely a player there and in the right system would click, but he's not good enough to change your entire system around, of course. But like the goal he scored against Sheffield United, that is to me what Dan Juma can bring that we haven't really got. And the frustrating thing is we see McNeil cutting a lot, and I think Dyche likes that and he kind of gets that number. But it happened, one of the highlights I've seen from the other night, McNeil gets the ball on his, like he's on the right side of Everton's penalty area. He's come over to link off Palace's penalty area, come over to link up with Harrison. But because it would be to put it onto his right foot naturally, he just can't do it. He just can't use his right foot. And it's like, if we could get Dan Juma doing that, you have then a player. But like when Dan Juma plays, he kind of seems to just stand out on the left and not really do anything. So it is frustrating.
He's hilariously one-footed McNeil, isn't he? Like there was that moment in the game on Wednesday. I can't remember exactly when it was, but like he was running across the pitch, and like you were saying, like the ball was so naturally on his right side, and there was nobody near him, but he still was like running round to kick it with his left foot. It's just like, come on, mate! Your right foot can't be that bad. You're a professional footballer. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens there. But yeah, like I said, lads, no game this weekend. But there is stuff looming over us, isn't there? Of course, 5 days ago now, it feels like so much has gone on since we found out that Everton were getting hit or have been charged with another breach of profit and sustainability rules. I mean, Lyndon, where are you at with this, mate? Like, throughout the week, I've been trying to... Like, I don't know if you've seen the programme over here called The Million Pound Drop. I don't know if there's a version of it in America. Mm-hmm. So effectively, you put... Like, you've got a big stack of £1 million and you get a question and you've got four possible answers and you can put it on each answer based on how sure you are. So if you know it completely, it's £1 million.
Right.
You can divide it up basically depending on how sure you are. And I've kind of been doing that in my head of like how angry I am at different people this week. So like I've had like half of it's like at Everton, like 25% of it's at the Premier League. It's very fluid. I'm not like settled yet. And I still don't quite know who I'm most angry at, who I'm most disappointed with. Where I should be directing any bits of rage that might emerge every now and then. Just emotionally all over the place with it. How are you finding it all? Where is it sitting with you now, 5 days on?
Yeah, I'm a bit like you because, you know, when in the cold light of day, when you look at it, and you look at particularly because I think someone surfaced an article in The Guardian on Toffee Web today, just in the comments, going back to where it said, you know, Premier League teams face points deduction for breaking the new profitability and sustainability rules. And you kind of think, okay, so the rules have always been there. We've known about the rules and we've known about the potential consequences of them. So on the one hand, you know, and we've seen how much we've spent. We've been railing against it for years, you know, the amount of money that's just been, you know, thrown up against the wall and pissed down the gutter by the club. And then on the flip side of you, look at our net spend over the last 5 years. And that's, you know, yeah, okay, you can account for wages and all the rest of it. We've had some high earners, which we've been working to get off the books. But when you look at it in that sense, like, well, we haven't been like recklessly, madly spending, you know, the way that, say, the City did in the early days of you know, when Abu Dhabi United Group came on board. So it is very much kind of on the one hand this, on the other hand that. And then, you know, you come down to the fact that we've been given a 10-point deduction for something that was less egregious than what, you know, Portsmouth going out of business in 2009. And then you get into the fact that there was there was an agreed fact that you would have a points deduction, but there was no format for how you would work that out until they made it up at the last minute after we'd already been charged. And so I'm at the point where, you know, the fundamental rationale for the deduction in the first place. Sorry, I don't know where I'm going with this now. Yeah, it's just the fact that we've been given this egregious points deduction, and the people who are being hit the hardest are the fans, obviously, and the players and the current manager. And we're going back now 3 years four years actually now, if you've got the double COVID years, you know, that we're still being hit for that. The double jeopardy aspect is obviously huge. How can you charge a team for the same crime twice, give them points deduction two in the same season, you know, for something that happened 3 years ago under people that have long gone, the owner's got one foot out the door. So I think, yes, in principle, the idea of a points deduction and PSR rules all made sense. All the clubs signed up to it. Maybe half of them didn't think they would ever get, you know, fall foul of it. So yeah, just we'll vote it in and deal with it later. Everton, right up to May 2022, were being told by the Premier League that they had no case to answer for. I think they clearly felt that, you know, they had verifiable mitigating factors, you know, behind any breach. The Premier League obviously telling other clubs that Everton were fine. And then the league appears to have got the hump that we signed a few more players in the summer of 2022, which, I mean, they were all under 15 million, some of them on the drip, you know. And then you've got Chelsea spending the GDP of a small country every summer when, you know, and just spending whatever they want. So for me, the fact that there's no precedent for the situation, there was no points framework, sanction framework, and Everton clearly felt that they were being transparent and working with the Premier League. The fact that this was a novel situation, it had never happened before. I just feel like there should have been a degree of latitude applied by the Premier League. And I'm hoping that's what now comes out of the appeal process, is that someone's going to say, look, you know, 10 points was for a 20 or 19.5 million pound breach was pretty over the top. You know, let's address that. Let's bring it down. And see what happens. But yeah, it has such potential to damage the club, is the scary part, you know, and it's not our fault.
Yeah. Patrick, I know you read the previous document that came out after the Independent Commission gave us a 10-point deduction, cover to cover a couple of times. You were on a show with Dave and knew it in and out. I mean, are you ready to go through all that again? Are you ready to read another Independent Commission report?
I reread it again last night. So, yeah, I mean, look, I agree with Lyndon in a lot of aspects. And like you said, Matt, I think we can be mad at everyone. I don't think it's a media narrative necessarily. Like, there's some really respected journalists who I think are brilliant, kind of saying the line. Daniel's story earlier as well, like in response to the Fabs, the FAB's like comment saying like, you know, what about the fans of the other clubs? I think there's just got to be this blur line of like, the other clubs didn't get relegated because Everton overspent by 19 and a half million. It just didn't happen like that. And if it did, the clubs would have already sued when they had the chance after the first thing got put through. So let's put that on hold. I think with the second charge, I'm not really even thinking about it now. Now I'm just, it's made me realise how even more, well, all it is, and I think Paddy's done a great piece in The Athletic, I've written about it as well. John Blaine's done a big piece on the More Than A Game Substack that I run. But it's just making this appeal more and more important because, as Lyndon said, there was no precedent. Well, Everton's first case now is the precedent. You know, if I were Everton, I'd be going to Nottingham Forest and asking them to chuck us a few hundred thousand to pay Super Silk's wages for a day or two, because they need this they need a win for Everton as badly as a win for them. I was looking at Everton's statement, and Everton seemed to suggest that they still dispute how far they were over the limit. But then that's why I reread parts of it last night. Now, there's a point 49 essentially in the piece where Everton try and claim that they were only 112 million total, so 7 million of the 105 million threshold. The Premier League obviously came to 19.5 million over. The commission decided that Premier League were right. But Everton, like when you go through it, 7.6 million of that was for this transfer levy, which every club commits to, and Everton were trying to claim that should count as like youth development, and the commission threw that out. And I'm like, I don't even know if the best lawyer in the country is going to be able to argue with something that is so clearly like a bit of a con on Everton's part, trying to pull the wool over the eyes. And then when you look at the stadium interest issue, like it actually only comes down to about 2.2 million that the original commission found would be allowed. So again, the lawyer, the so barrister. Patrick,
those are the loans. So just to clarify, those were the loans that Everton took out and said were for stadium costs, but that has since been disputed by the Premier League.
Yeah, and it's disputed by the Premier League. Swiss Ramble at the time of the first charge did a big piece on it, and it doesn't help that in Metro they took two loans out, Metro Bank and Rights and Media. And this is the one that Everton claimed, but in Everton's loan application to Metro Bank, and I'm quoting, it says, "We do not intend to use any of the funds for the new stadium project." So it is essentially like, I don't know how they're going to find a way around it, but I'm not a lawyer getting, you know, 50 grand an hour or whatever they're going to get, 50 grand a week. It's like paying a footballer. I'm sure there is Everton, if they clearly are confident enough that they're going to go back and be able to dispute some of the figures. That's what it seemed to me in their statement anyway, in response to the second charge, because Everton essentially saying, if we weren't found guilty of this overspend, we wouldn't then be in breach again, you know, a second time, because of the rolling 3-year cycle. So I guess it comes down to that. And then on the other side, as Linda said, it maybe comes down to, I guess, you know, Everton are probably going to have two or three routes of attack, aren't they? They're going to have, can they dispute any of the figures again? You know, and maybe this is where the commercial litigation experts definitely come in, which is what the Super Silk is. He's the one of the top commercial litigators in the country, commercial barristers. You know, can they show that this loan interest, it was definitely on the stadium and they weren't going and paying players with it? Because the commission found again that they put on the balance of they actually say, essentially paraphrasing here, that they saw both sides of the argument. They saw that Everton wouldn't have needed to take this money out if they weren't building a stadium by themselves, but they couldn't, on the balance of probabilities, that's what they've said, prove that Everton used it for the stadium. And quotes like that in the loan application won't have helped. So can Everton prove that, you know, no, this money was on there, this interest was incurred from that and not playing for other things? And then I guess on the other side, it's, can they argue down that the punishment is just too harsh and it sets an unfair precedent? And maybe they'll even be able to point to upcoming cases, for example, Nottingham Forest, and say, like, you know, this is just going to set a dangerous precedent moving forward. And then just lastly, the case that the commission used as a precedent the first time was Sheffield Wednesday against the EFL. In that case, actually, Sheffield Wednesday did get 6 points back. So they went from a 12-point deduction to a 6-point deduction. Now, like I said, this case is now going to become the precedent. When the next hearing comes around, if it comes around for Everton, when it comes around for Forest, the independent commissioner at the time will not be using a precedent from the EFL. It will be using the Premier League versus Everton. So this is, again, why so much rests on this appeal. Like, can Everton maybe get 5 points back, and maybe they can argue harshness of the punishment? They could argue mitigating circumstances that weren't taken into account. You know, I'd be very disappointed if it comes out in February, whenever the hearing gets heard, and it's just Everton trying to retread the same argument, like that we didn't sue Gylfi Sigurdsson, so you should give us 10 million back. Like, it's, come on, like, but, you know, clearly, like, the war in Ukraine should have been considered more, in my opinion. COVID losses, maybe not, but, you know, losing sponsorship deals, that is a big thing to happen. You know, even just suspending the Finch Farm sponsorship was worth 12 million a year, 12 million a season. Like, they did it halfway through 21-22. You could say that's 6 million pro rata. Then they haven't got it at all for last season. You know, so I think there's arguments. And if Everton can get something back on that appeal, then maybe there's hope that the second charge, you know, it's all going to be kind of relative to each other. So, you know, if Everton managed to get 5 points back and then the second charge is 75% of the same offence, maybe they'll say, OK, that's only worth 2 points. And it ends up being that Everton get deducted 7 points overall, you know.
Yeah, expertly summed up there, mate. It's going to be a messy process, isn't it, going forward? And, like, I think, like you said, the fact they brought in a new lawyer would hopefully suggest that they're not just going to go down the same route in the appeal as they did with the initial one. But, you know, Linda, looking ahead, it's one of them, isn't it, now, where this is just going to hang over us for, you know, I think the appeal, you know, from what I've been told, it could be next week when it starts to, the hearings all start, and hopefully we'll get an answer on that soon. But you know, we could be looking at end of the season, beyond the end of the season, by the time Everton find out about this latest charge. And then, of course, there could be an appeal on that. So we could be looking at midway through the summer when all this gets resolved. And I think, like, you know, whatever you think about the rules, whatever you think about where Everton should have been charged, the punishments, that kind of thing, like, to have points potentially taken off months after the season's finished, to have appeals heard over the summer when teams are trying to do transfers, plan pre-season tours, et cetera, et cetera. That just feels weird and wrong, and it just means we, you know, potentially can't take anything really from matches between now and the end of the season, because we don't know what those things are going to mean.
Yeah, the sporting integrity of it all is really compromised by it, isn't it? It's just the way that they've done it, the way that they've sort of let the process lag from previous seasons, obviously, into this one, which means we've obviously had the 10 points deducted. And then, you know, what they're trying to do is to have everything with our case and Forest, both our first appeal, the next commission, and any appeals beyond that. They want all of that wrapped up by something like the 24th of May or something. But you know, whenever it is, the potential is, as you say, we could finish the season and still not know who's been relegated, you know, or we could, so let's say hypothetically, we win our appeal, or we get some points back, say at the end of February, then for the rest of the season, the teams down below us and the teams immediately above us are not sure how many points we're going to end up, or maybe even Forest are going to end up with at the end of the season. So it's just mad the way that they've done. And this is what I keep coming back to about where some common sense should sort of enter the equation, because I think if they could wind the clock back, the league would do this very differently, you know, because as I said before, we've had this idea of points penalties, but then now you're in a situation where the actual practical implementation of all this is just making a complete mess. So I wouldn't have been surprised if they just said, look, let's just put a brake on all of this, bring the new rules in August, and then everyone knows, you know, more from where they stand. What Patrick said, you know, summed it up brilliantly. And for me, I think if they try and relitigate it on the or just on the question of whether they breached at all, I think that's probably a losing argument. I would hammer the severity of the sanction for the fact that really we're talking about stadium interest when it comes down to it, you know, and the fact that I think with the next appeal, the key to it from Everton might be the Ukraine thing is obviously much more of a factor. I think because obviously the invasion was February 2022. That's only a few months of the season. But as you said, Matt, the whole of last season, it comes into play. So I think you've got much more of a case for Everton perhaps having a fine or a suspended sentence for the next appeal. But again, as you say, we have no idea, and we won't know until the season finishes. So how do you approach the rest of the season? Are you just kind of take it game by game and say, okay, we've got 3 points there, so that inches us a little bit closer to some unknown points, you know, deficit that we're going to have to face at the end of the season? It's mad.
It's all this bluster now, Patrick, and all the potential like terrible bits of it that we've spoken about, coupled with the fact that I think managers clearly in this window, it's been noticeable. Like, I've heard Arteta talking about it and Eddie Howe talking about it quite a lot, about how they can't spend money in this window without selling players because of these rules. Do you think the Premier League will look at that and the way in which teams are cutting back and being more sensible in the spending? And maybe us, obviously, being one example, of Forest being the other, as like the sort of the sacrificial lambs, in a sense that, right, we're gonna hit these hard with these rules, and we're gonna make sure that, you know, we're strict with them, and we're gonna send a message to everybody else about this. Will they look at that and then look at Arsenal tightening the belt, Newcastle tightening the belt, other teams spending a bit more sensibly, and think these rules are actually starting to work and have an effect now? Like, will they see all this as a positive from their point of view, do you think?
I mean, I don't know if you watched any of Richard Masters' appearance in front of the DCMS.
Yes, bits and pieces.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think it's all been done with the best of intentions, but it's a bit like VAR, but it's just the like Linda said, the application of it and the way it's been done and the people doing it, it's just like they don't really have a clue. And I think with the Premier League, and this is on them and the clubs, the arrogance of the clubs. Like when we say the Premier League, we have to remember the people who own the Premier League are the clubs. It's the 20 clubs at the time. And Richard Masters, as much as he came across as extremely arrogant and, you know, he's been a target of abuse, at the end of the day, he heads up an executive board that his job is also to represent those clubs. And like when he's saying, you know, at the DCMS the other day, like he kind of begrudgingly accepted it the other day that an independent regulator is going to happen. But at the first case, the first hearing, he was very much against it. That's because the clubs don't want it. He, you know, he's doing his job in that sense. But I think that they're going to look at it and say, yeah, we're going to hit these hard. These are working. But he did say that in February at the next shareholders meeting, which, you know, we may well know the outcome of the appeal by then, there is going to be a vote on to go to the UEFA model, which there hasn't been confirmation of when it comes in. Everton assert that it will be coming in next season, you know, but Richard Masters was a bit more vague and he said that, you know, we're considering it. We don't know when it would be, but basically to go to this UEFA cost model, I think a squad cost model where they just do it slightly differently. And UEFA are a lot more charitable with their punishments, but they still do hand them out and they essentially offer like, you know, 5-year, not suspended sentences as such, but 5-year watchdogs really. And it's like, if you do something again in these 5 years, you are getting banned from Europe. It's different with UEFA. UEFA don't have the right to go and dock Real Madrid 20 points, but they do have the right to ban them from the Champions League, for example. Not that they probably would. It's all a mess. And that was what really made me laugh the other day about Richard Masters when it was put to him, do you not think it's messy? And he said with a straight face, no. And yet you've got clubs threatening to sue each other. You've got a club that doesn't know if it's going to be hit with another deduction or gets points back, or both happen. Like they could get points back and then they'd be deducted 10 points again anyway. You've got appeals that could last until 5 days after the season is finished. You know, you've got Nottingham Forest are going to potentially try and claim that because they didn't sell a player in the accounting window, they should be rewarded for it, but then, which seems like mad, but then when you look at the profit and sustainability rules, it's more profitable and sustainable for Nottingham Forest to sell Brennan Johnson for 20 million more than they were getting offered 2 months earlier. Like, how is that not messy? So, yeah, I think it's, again, it's like the best of intentions, but it just needs refining and the people in charge to realise, you know, some common sense needs to be applied. But the issue is, and like when you read the independent commission, it's like these are lawyers and accountants and they're just looking at it, and you know, the best up in the country at what they do, but they're just looking at the facts at hand. They're just looking at it and going, this is black and white, and they're not gonna be taking the emotion into account. And I guess again, this is just comes back to the appeal. It's why the appeal for Everton is so important. It's, you know, can the club get across that this is about emotion, this is about the fans. You know, to me, I'd be using everything that Richard Masters said when he was trying to offer sound bites the other day about football being for the fans, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you know, I'd be throwing back that, you know, throwing that at them in the appeal. I'd be throwing it at him in the next hearing because he's going to be getting up again to do his witness statement. So, you know, again, I'm not a lawyer. I wish I was.
Sound like one, mate.
Yeah, it does.
You know, but he despairs, because I do think at the heart of it, there has to be obviously some regulation, there has to be some financial safety nets, but the way it's applied at the minute is just chaotic. And yeah, no, but nobody really does have a clue.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think that the rules of, it depends which way you look at them, don't you? Like, on the one hand, they will stop teams spending recklessly and potentially going the way of Portsmouth, etc., etc. Like, if these rules are implemented, then, and teams follow them properly, then that will happen, because teams won't spend outside the means. But it also just locks in the established order, doesn't it? In the sense of, you know, how can teams coming up to the Premier League eventually get to a point where they're competing with City? You know, how can even like teams like us and Palace, even like who are sort of marooned in mid table, get to that point about something amazing happening? Like, I thought it was interesting that he used the example of Brighton in the in the DCMS here in the other day. It's like, well, the sixth in the league, they're not going to win the title, have they? Or pushed.
Exactly, they're going to be a glass ceiling. The only way that I think this was pointed out, Brighton, a brilliant model to follow. But, you know, do you know what Brighton benefit from? Chelsea being able to go and chuck 200 million at them every window.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, again, and it's this revenue-based way of doing it. You just can't play catch-up unless, ironically, you go on, I don't know, try and, like, change where you're playing so you can upgrade your infrastructure, which I know is counted outside of the PSR models, but, you know, try and do that in a pandemic, try and do that self-funding. And I think we can all look back, like, you know, this could all have been avoided if Mashiri in 2019 had taken up the interest rate of whatever it was at the time, 2%, and just got the loan out or gone with the council, and we wouldn't have had any of this. We probably wouldn't have had it, but we also wouldn't have had any of this if we'd have just not bought Ben Godfrey. Like, these are the things. We wouldn't have any of this if, you know, Carlo Ancelotti had won two or three more games in the running in 2021. Everton would have finished sixth, and they wouldn't have had any of this. They'd have got been 20 million better off. It's all ifs and buts, and I just think that's what they need to take into account, that, you know, when applying the rules, it can't be that the punishment for the rules is more damaging to the profit and sustainability of a club, any club. It just doesn't make sense. And same for Forest. Like, you know, a points deduction for Forest could really help Everton, and we don't know how much they've gone over. But again, Swiss Ramble, his piece on them earlier this week, he said, well, by his calculations, they needed to essentially lose less than 39 million and they'd have been fine. So if he's right, Forest have lost more than 40 million last year. Mm. And if the reports that they needed to sell Brennan Johnson by a certain date are right, then, and 30 million wasn't enough for them, then you could be looking at they're at least 30 million over. You know, and where does that come into play? So yeah, again, very messy and when you've got the CEO of the Premier League claiming it's not a mess, you just think, well, what's the way out, really?
Yeah, I wonder if all our fans will be saying, enforce the rules properly, and Forest can get like a 15-point deduction, we'll all become sticklers for the PNS regulations by that point.
I think Forest and Everton play each other in April, late April, so that could be a fun one. Just the entire Goodison, just even the away fans holding up the banners.
Yeah. The PSR derby.
And just to finish off as well, I'll come to you, Lyndon. Richard Masters also spoke about 777. I mean, speaking of Messi, Jesus Christ. It sounded to me like he was annoyed with them in a way. And I think a lot of the themes that he said in regards to not getting answers to questions properly, dragging stuff out, it follows a theme of many, many, many reports we've seen from them across the portfolio of football clubs they've got. And based on what he said and how frustrated he seemed to be with it, it's one of them now you look at and say, again, you've got to have your doubts about this happening, and then we could potentially, well, we have taken £150 million off them as well. It's just, I mean, where does that leave us?
It's really, really worrying because, you know, it's not just an isolated incident. Or, you know, you could look at, say, Yosimar and some of their expose articles, some of the early ones, and just think, okay, you're really digging, you know, to try and find dirt on this lot. It doesn't seem to be hard to find. It's everywhere you look. You know, you'd go right back to the founding of the company and the kind of the really sort of ethically suspect methods that, you know, and just the dirty world that they were in. You know, you could say that they've moved there, they've kind of left that behind, but you've around every corner you've got payments that are late, or that eventually, it seems like they eventually find the money, but not before they've caused a whole load of grief. And you know, Vasco da Gama have got transfer banned, Standard Liège have been hit by one by the Belgian league, I think. And that, I made this point on our podcast yesterday. I said, that's just got Everton written all over it. Transfer bans and you know, trouble with the league. It's like, we don't need to invite any more of that. So the flip side of it is that they seem to have the football side of it actually, you know, they seem to know what they're doing on the football side. They've obviously got, you know, they've created this football division, this global football division. They've got Johannes Spores, I think, the guy that Tottenham, I think, at one point wanted for their sporting director. He speaks very well about what they want to do. You know, the teams that they bought all on the pitch at least are usually sort of in general doing well or sort of improving. So if they could prove that the money is there and the Premier League are happy that the money is there, then it could work. But I'm just looking at this really sort of shady infrastructure that they've got that just seems like a house of cards that's ready to fall at any moment. And as I say, there's nothing more Everton than that, you know?
Yeah, and interview this week, Patrick Vizer-Caden saying he didn't get paid frequently or on time from the ages. It feels like every day there's just a new story with them, isn't
it? No, it feels like, is this like are MSP just spending all that money they gathered just to put out all the bad news stories about something? I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm one of them. Like, I totally see where people are coming from. Like, we want better than this, and I fully support that argument. Especially when I see Josh Wander's got a stunt double that also wears a suit and a cap. I'm baffled by that. But
that was very strange. Very strange.
Yeah, they have to do a double take. But on the flip side, again, it's like, well, look, they're clearly putting the money where the mouth is. I don't know where the money's coming from, but they're putting it to an extent. Does it exist? This is the thing. Money at that level just doesn't exist, does it? It's just numbers. It's just numbers on a page or on a computer. And if a club goes bust or a company goes bust, those numbers don't exist anymore. That's the way of the world. And, you know, fans or smaller people in any walk of life are left picking up the scraps, unfortunately. I think the issue with 777 now is that they are in so deep at Everton, and Everton in so deep with them that, you know, if for whatever reason the Premier League said no, which, you know, it did sound like Masters was annoyed with them, but I also think, are they, like, just to play devil's advocate, are the Premier League doing everything they can to say yes to 7-7? So, like, you know, is it, which way is it? Are they doing everything they can to say no to them? Why would they do that? That puts one of their clubs in a lot of danger. Like, and I don't think they want that deep. Like, I think the PSR thing is a bit different. They're wanting to be strict with punishment. I don't think they actively want a club to go out of business. It wouldn't be a good look for the Premier League at all, and especially Richard Masters. So are they wanting to say yes and they're just not getting the answers? And then, you know, if 7-7 if the move doesn't go through, Everton are lumped with 150 million worth of debt that, you know, people keep saying, oh, we can go get better. There'll be other people coming. There'll be other owners. It's like, Jesus Christ, if they're not speaking up now, when are they going to speak up? And then is that owner going to come in and be willing to write off all the existing debt, all the debt to rights and media funding, and then another 150 million worth of debt to 777? It's a mess. And I almost do now think that, unfortunately, the best way out is going to be 7-7 getting hold of it. And just, we've got to maybe hope that their plan is just to kind of get to the stadium, have a few years there and flip the club maybe. But in the meantime, maybe we could benefit from their multi-club expertise. I don't know. But yeah, it doesn't look good. Doesn't look like Isaac Hayden will be coming to us in the summer anyway.
Hey, give it a few years. I'd be lucky to have a player like him. You never know. The takeover stuff is mad. It feels like whichever path we go down, it's just fraught with danger and jeopardy. It's so grim. What are you up to this weekend, lads, anyway? Try and finish on a positive. Lyndon, what have you got planned?
Not much, actually. The wife's away. She's traveling to the other side of the country. And I know, I'm trying to adjust to this weird world where we're just not playing on a regular schedule. It's just bizarre. You know, cram all the games in December, and then we'll play three Premier League games, I think, after the next cup game, all sandwiched into 11 days. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You know, players get injured, and then the Premier League's like, oh, well, they have a month to get fit again. No, it doesn't work that way. So, yeah, not much, mate, not much. Looking after the dogs.
Yes. Patrick, what about you?
Got a friend coming over from Amsterdam. So, yeah, playing badminton tomorrow with my missus. And then, yeah, got into badminton in the last few weeks. So, last few months, actually. So, I'll be thinking, like, yeah, if it all ends this season, I'll just take up a passing interest in, you know, another sport that's not going to make my life miserable. But yeah, quiet weekend generally, just, yeah, a few drinks maybe tomorrow night. But it is going to be nice not having to, like, do you know that thing where, like, you've got something planned on a Saturday night or whatever, and Everton are playing at 3 o'clock or 12:30, and you know, you're almost like, I remember where we're going out in November after the Palace game, and it's like obviously the way that the Palace game won, and then just sets you up for the entire week. And then obviously 6 days later, we go get hit with 10 points. But yeah, it's nice when you have that one of thinking, whatever happens, like I can just have a nice time. My day is not going to get ruined by refereeing decisions or Michael Keane playing or anything like that.
Oh, amazing. Well, best of luck in your Bamerton match.
It's like my girlfriend's much better than me at it. So yeah, I'm on a losing streak.
There you go. Some sport we can all get behind over the weekend without Everton. Fingers crossed Patrick gets the win in that. Cheers to both of the lads for joining us. We've got mailbag that'll be out tonight. We also got instant reaction from the game on Wednesday as well. And just before I go, I would encourage absolutely everybody, if they haven't already, to give a listen to the latest old new Borough Blue that Les has done with Adam Sutton. It's 45 minutes long. It's absolutely magnificent. It'll have you laughing and crying. So do go and check it out. It's absolutely boss. Les is doing some great stuff with that show. Definitely looking to get Lyndon and Patrick involved in it at some point further down the line as well. But do go and check that out over the weekend about the Toffees. Try and stay positive. Up the Blues. I'll speak to you soon.
Network.